he'll stay away for good. I'd stop living if you should. Love is funny. It's not always peaches, cream, and honey. Just when everything seemed bright and sunny, suddenly the cyclone came. I'll never be the same till the sun comes out and the rain stops beating on my windowpane. If my heart holds out, let it rain, let it pour. It may not be long before there's a knocking at my door, and you'll know the one I love walked in. When the sun comes out, sunny, suddenly the cyclone came. I'll never be the same till that sun comes out and the rain stops beating on my windowpane. If my heart holds out, let it rain, let it pour. It may not be long before there's a knocking at my door, and you know the one I love walked in when the sun comes out.
Library Commission has been called to order, and let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America
and to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation
under God.
Indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And now can we do the roll call, Janet?
Hello, Chair Goodman.
Present.
Vice Chair Murr.
Present.
Commissioner Aguilar.
Present.
Commissioner Callahan?
Present.
All right. And is there any public forum at this time? Anyone who would like to make a comment on anything not on the agenda?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak to any item, please use the raise your hand icon and unmute yourself. Chair Goodman, I see no public comments.
All right, seeing none, we'll move on to item A1, our consent calendar. Approval of our minutes from our Monday, May 4th meeting. Do I have someone who would like to move to approve the minutes? Commissioner Murr moved. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. Janet, call for a vote.
Chair Goodman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Murr?
Aye.
Commissioner Aguilar?
Aye.
Commissioner Callanan?
Aye.
Right, the minutes pass, and now we're going to move on to item B1 and receive a report from Allison, our director's report.
Okay, can everyone hear me? Perfect. All righty. So this is the report for March. And you can see we have a new template that the city is using citywide. So I decided to make it a pretty blue this time. And we can advance to the next slide for our statistics. We had 14 virtual programs with a total attendance of 686 people. 315 craft kits were distributed to people that came to the Goleta Library. 138 people of all ages participated in the Winter Reading Club. There were 1,137 uses of the wireless network. 9,064 people visited the library to use it. And 18,046 items were circulated in March. A total of 37 volunteers, teen and adult, put in 203 hours. We're so glad to have our volunteers back at the library. That really makes us feel like things are coming back to normal. We provided sidewalk service to 106 patrons. We know there are still people that are uncomfortable coming into a public building. So if they come and park in the parking lot and give us a call, we are happy to check out their materials to them and hand deliver them to their car. The Isla Vista Book Van had interactions with 508 people in March. We did have a few rainouts. And in case you haven't been to the library yet, this picture of this very nice lady is Carla Mason. She is our new supervising librarian. She comes to us most recently from the main branch at the Seattle Public Library, where she had what I can only assume was the horrible task of doing the scheduling for the hundreds of people that worked at the multiple service desks at that library. She has a lot of experience in California public libraries. She's very much a community librarian, and I think she's going to be a great addition to our staff. And she got here in time to be here for our all staff meeting, which was wonderful. So she just finished her first 2 weeks here, and this will be her third week, and we're really pleased to have her here. So if you have a chance to come on by, she's in the big glass office in the library. Introduce yourselves. I'm sure she'd be really happy to meet you. Carla Mason. So due to the transition from the Polaris computer system to the COHA system and the accounting rules that we have to follow for the end of our current fiscal year, which ends June 30th of 2022, we had to place our final book and audio visual orders by the end of March. This is definitely earlier than normal. Normally, we would place our final orders around the end of May, but because of the transfer to COHA, we knew there would be a lot of issues, and so we felt it would be best for finance and also for Black Gold and Janet and I to get them in by the end of March so that we're sure we have a clean audit for 20 1/22. So we won't be placing new orders until the start of the new fiscal year in July 1st, but that doesn't mean we haven't been hard at work selecting items. I currently have in my my carts, we order all of our books from a company called Baker & Taylor, and I currently have carts that amount to probably about $15,000 worth of materials published between April through September at this point. So we're ready to go. Come July 1st, we're going to submit all those orders and fill the library quickly with new books and new audiovisual materials as well, of course. All full-time staff participated in a three-day training in the circulation acquisitions reporting COHA software that we converted to as of April 25th. As expected, there were loads of quirky little things that happened. We're still working out a lot of them. Black Gold is working tirelessly to try to get everything sorted out, but it has not been easy on anyone. And, you know, our patrons especially, we're still having issues with running the holds list every day to get people the holds that they've requested of us overnight. So it's definitely a work in progress, but we hope that things will be ironed out within the next 2 weeks at the latest. So the departmental budget review with the city manager was completed, and we also held meetings with the Buellton and Solvang city managers to go over the budgets for 22-23. The Solvang and Buellton cities get extra cannabis funding from the county. Main branches do not in Santa Barbara County, unfortunately, but it helps balance Buellton and Solvang's budget. So they were pleased with that extra amount that they got, and we were able to balance our budget and have a great book budget of about $184,000 for next year, which should definitely help any pain felt by the removal of the titles owned by Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo. And that is my report for March. I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone might have.
I had a question.
Yes.
Actually, I had a question and a comment. So first was, you know, I was interested about your virtual programs. And so I did a little bit of the math, and it sounded like there were an average of 50 attendees for each virtual program, which sounds just amazing. And can you tell me whether or not that was because of there was one big event, or all of your programs tend to get that kind of audience?
It was because all of our programs in March were virtual. We started doing in-person programs in April and slowed way down on the virtual programs in April because we're trying to figure out the balance of how we're going to move forward. We still want to have some virtual programming, but right now, because we are currently in the process of restoring most of our old hours next week, or actually this week, we're trying to figure out how to schedule to cover the desks, because we'll be reopening on evenings and Sundays, and how to handle live programming, and then when would we have the opportunity to film virtual programs. So we're trying to juggle a lot and figure it out, because we definitely want to come to a good balance of live and virtual.
Great. And then my comment is just, you were talking about your orders for new books, and I am a very frequent visitor of the library, and I make book requests all the time when I order them, either for myself, I would say, oh, this would be great, either for adults or for my kids. And I would say that I keep on getting emails saying, oh, this book that you suggested has now been ordered. So I would just like to say that I have found that whole process to be very responsive.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it. Thank you, Meredith. Dave?
Yeah, I think my video is screwed up, so I'm seeing a very odd still of me. So if you guys see the same, my apologies. actually, I just wanted, it follows up perfectly with Meredith. I just wanted to say, you know, the transition as the library was shut down late last month and everything, the communications have been fantastic. And it's even more of a joy going in there. The staff, I've been in there last three times last month, and it was exceptional. And just wanted to commend you and the staff for, you know, as things open up, it's a very welcoming place. And as a pillar of the community, I think that's so critical. So kudos to you.
Thank you so much. We're very fortunate in our staff. They're wonderful. Thank you very much. I will pass that along to them.
Cool.
Any other comments or questions? If not, I'm definitely interested in item B2. So, and want to have plenty of time for that. So before we get to it, is there any public comment on item B2?
Before we get to that, Commissioner Callanan, could you put your hand down? Okay, thank you. If there are any members of the public wishing to speak to this item, please use the raise your hand icon and unmute yourself at this time. Chair Goodman, I see no public comments.
Okay, so we'll move on to item B2 on First Amendment audits.
Okay, so one thing I find extremely important as a director is making sure that my staff is prepared, well prepared for any eventuality. And I'm reading more and more about First Amendment audits happening in public libraries. This is a policy that I would like for you to help me create so that I can then train the staff to be ready in the very off chance that this does happen to us at Goleta. So we can go to the next slide. So these First Amendment audits started on the East Coast, and they're very slowly sort of making their way west. And it is an American social movement as activism and citizen journalism that tests constitutional rights. Next slide, please, Janet. In particular, it's testing the right to photograph and video record in public places. Auditors believe that the movement promotes transparency and open government. Sorry, let me turn my phone off. Some libraries have had individuals come in with their phones, filming staff and, quote, auditing the library's policies and procedures. And they're trying to incite staff to be upset and say something argumentative or emotional that would make for a good social media video that could cause trouble and make some money for the videographer. This has not happened to any of the libraries in the surrounding area, but it's good to be prepared just in case. And since I wrote that, I found out that I was mistaken. Actually, we discovered that there was a First Amendment audit at Santa Barbara's Central Branch back in 2019. So auditors will say that the library is a public place and therefore it is his or her right to film there. In all actuality, public libraries are government entities and therefore we are not public places, we're limited public forums. And the courts have deciphered that to mean that we do have the right to set certain time, place, and manner restrictions. So we can limit behavior or speech within that limited public forum, which is really important. And it's really important that I educate my staff about that distinction between a public space and a limited public forum. Next slide. We never want staff members to allow anyone to provoke them into getting upset or saying something that could be used against the library. I want to make sure that staff cite accurate policy information because we don't want anything being said that can be inflated into a situation. So next slide. Right now, there is no policy that addresses filming in the Goleta and Santa Ynez libraries. But because our users have a general expectation of confidentiality and freedom from harassment, it's probably time to consider creating a policy on filming in the library. Now, we do have security cameras running 24/7 at Goleta. They do not in Solving or Buellton. Those tapes are erased every 24 hours. So they're just really a deterrent. And if there were an incident, we would be able to access the coverage within that 24 hours. But after that, it's gone. We do have signs up around the building and in the multipurpose room that we will take photographs during programs at times, and that if parents do not want their children photographed, to please come and talk to us. We try never to photograph children's faces unless we've got an actual consent form signed by the parent, but crowd shots, we feel we're entitled to take. And so we have posters up all around the building about that. So those are the two things that we do. So next slide. So possible topics for us to think about and that I would love for you to think about and give me input today or at our next meeting if you want to have more time to think about it. You know, everybody has their cell phones out these days, and it's hard to know necessarily whether someone is filming or not. Do we want to allow filming as long as it's not disruptive to other patrons? Now, it could be that, you know, someone is walking around and filming our beautiful children's room wall decorations in order to show it to their sibling somewhere in another state to show them what a great children's section we have at Goleta. Does that bother us? No, not really. But if they were standing behind someone at one of the public internet computers, that we wouldn't be comfortable with because the computer user has some sense that they should be able to use the computer uninterrupted and unharassed. So the question is, how do we ascertain what filming is disruptive and what filming is not disruptive? And when does staff intervene or not intervene? And you can see it's kind of a thorny question and hard to come to a real black and white policy on that. So that's one of the questions that we have. And I've looked for policies on this, and most of them either say just flat out no filming at all, or you can film whatever you want. So I haven't found really one that I have felt comfortable with so far. So I'm asking you to think about that. Also, what do we feel about filming children, in particular their faces? Because we don't know, you know, what anyone's personal circumstances are in the library, and they may have very good reasons for not wanting their children's faces to be recorded and then put online. There could be, you know, family issues, and there could be legal issues with where they don't want their children identified for someone to find them, for example. So we need to think about that. OK, can we still film programs and attendees ourselves in the library if we're telling the public that they can't? Some policies I've seen have said, well, you could come in and film in the library, but only if you receive advance permission from the library director. And that's a possibility, or the library branch supervisor, which would be more sensible since of the three branches each have a branch supervisor. Can filmers disrupt staff at work? That's pretty easy, no. And as a limited public forum, one thing they absolutely cannot do is they cannot go into non-public spaces. So as long as we have signage up, such as that we do, that the workroom in the back is not open to the public, if somebody went back there and started filming, we would call for help, because that would be, they would be in private space, disregarding the sign saying that they weren't allowed back there. So, but I've seen, if you YouTube First Amendment audits, you can see some of these videos where they're very aggressively asking staff at the circulation desk, what's your name? And the staff may give a first name, but they want the last name. And our staff is not obligated to give a last name. But the videographer is very aggressive and the staff gets flustered. And sometimes they'll try to go behind the circulation desk, which both for reasons of COVID, we're not allowing anymore. We used to let people go behind the desk to pick up their holds. We don't do that anymore. We also absolutely don't want anyone filming what staff is doing on the circulation computers, because there is confidential information on there that we are required by state and federal law to keep confidential. So we need to set very clear parameters for what is allowed by the videographer to film in terms of staff. And then if we could go to the next slide. Who should discuss the library policies with all the auditors? I think that should be the branch supervisor, myself, or the librarian in charge if the branch supervisor is not there. Unfortunately, I'm not on site, so I can't do it. Otherwise, I would say that it would be me. And then finally, should staff intervene if they see someone filming? And what if the person is filming what a computer user is looking at online? We do not have those privacy screens installed, and that may be something that we want to think about getting as a way of helping to protect against this possibility. But these are some of the questions that I have come up with, and you may have thought of others as you read your packet and as you listened to me tonight. And I would just love to hear any input that you have and be able to come back to you with perhaps a sample policy, have it vetted by our city attorney, and then come back to you, have you look at it and get your feedback again, and then eventually go to the city council for approval. Lori?
Thanks. I just want to say that I have, I think we need to be concerned about protecting privacy, and that patrons have a right to expect that, not only children. You don't know what is in anyone's life. You don't know if a woman is worried about being identified by her batterer. You don't know if someone is undocumented and concerned about their identity being revealed or their location being revealed. So I would strongly encourage a policy that does not allow filming of people without permission. And I think that if the library is holding an event that you want to film, you need to be very transparent about informing people, maybe more than just a poster on the wall, which people can really miss.
Make an announcement. Yeah, or make an like announcement. Yeah.
We will be, you know, we'll be filming this event because we want to share it on our social media. If you don't want to be filmed, here's a place in the room you can stand. Here's, you know, here's how you can review it. And then I think that makes the policy much easier because you're just simply not allowing any human being to be filmed by you or by anyone else without express permission.
Thank you.
I see both Commissioner Murr and Commissioner Callanan. So Commissioner Murr?
Sure. So, you know, I have a couple questions because so I completely agree with Chair Goodman's remarks about the sensitivity and how it's important to protect the privacy of the patrons. I also think that drawing this line between what the library is going to do versus what, you know, anyone else at the library might be doing, it's easier to make a policy for what the library is going to do because you have a lot of control over your employees and what's going to happen. And I would really like to know just a little bit more about how frequent these things are happening and also how many other libraries have created policies. I mean, is it 1% of libraries have created policies or 50% of libraries have created policies? I want to know kind of where we would be in that range. And then I'm also interested, I mean, it's one thing to have a policy and then there's another part about implementation.
You've frozen, Meredith.
Whether or not.
We heard one thing about having a policy, and then we lost you.
I'm so sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. And now I'm not exactly where I stopped. Where you stopped hearing me? But I'm worried a little bit about implementation, because you have a lot of control over your employees and you can make a policy and you can enforce that policy. And the question is when you're making a policy for kind of the general public that might be coming into the library and takes it upon themselves to video, the question is who is going to actually enforce that and, you know, having a plan for that, because otherwise it's just a policy without necessarily a whole lot to back it up. So that's what I was going to say.
I'm not sure if there's actually been any study about how many libraries have created policies on this, but I can try to get a sense of that. What I am getting a sense of is it definitely started in the East Coast and then it's just been a wave making its way across the country. And a future topic I'm going to be bringing to you is going over our collection policy and our request for consideration policy, because book banning is hugely accelerating across the country. So it's just sort of this anti-library, anti-public information wave that's happening right now. So I will try to get that information for you. I'm not sure that I'll be able to get you any sort of sense of how the percentage of public libraries that are coming up with policies, but I will try.
Dave, you want to ask your question?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think, you know, there's some ideas that can be had on this group, but I think, you know, it's really important because I think this is the beginning of sort of an unfortunate new normal, as you mentioned, the book burning and things like that. I think employing sort of a legal counsel of some sort to understand really where the parameters go, because while this activity is disdainful, we want to make sure that we aren't fueling it by maybe something that's a little too rushed. One idea that might be helpful in the interim, because that takes time, would be, you know, if you did have a posted note of any filming requires 48 hours advance notice, because that in this case removes the power that these people come in, where they come in to agitate, or in some cases they come in silently, which actually is kind of more unsettling for staff. If someone's just sitting there quietly and won't answer any questions but has a phone up in their face, that's a harder one to deal with. I think you can train the staff, but that's one just absolutely seeped in provoking. So, you know, I know it's a great point, but Meredith, of you know, who's going to enforce it, but I think something to 48 hours, whatever that posted may be, can then allow, you know, we will contact local authorities, because I mean that's what they ultimately want, but like, let's get them there faster if that's what they want, because it's not fair or right to the staff or the patrons to have to put up with it.
Right. Thank you.
Hey.
I just wanted to add in, we have a similar combination. So I work at UCSB Library and we have a similar combination of those policies. So we don't allow any filming, but say if a student org or any kind of organization or anyone with a real project or a more useful premise wants to film, they can request permission to film or to do maybe a photo series or something. So you see that sometimes with students who want to have the graduation pics in the library. And then it became a thing where once we learned that that's a need, that becomes something that we can help provide more users with access to. That way it's not only a few kids that get to have their photo in the library. So I think taking control over that gives also the library more power to meet the needs of its patrons.
Can I ask you a question, Marcos? Is there a form for that, or is there?
There's not a form, but you have to basically contact someone from our outreach team. And so there's like an email that four or five different people have access to. It's not clear who gets to make the decision. So like sometimes it could be a choice that is greenlit for development reasons. And then other times the choice could be greenlit because it's harmless. But those aren't always the same thing. But yeah, by having that policy, it's allowed us to just say no to things that are kind of meant to be disruptive or distracting or meant to make people feel uncomfortable.
Thank you, that's really helpful.
Meredith, did you have another comment?
I did. I had another one. I would also love to understand what the process is. So if you're going to be creating a new policy, can you explain the process? So you're clearly getting input from us, but then where would that go after this?
Then I would put it together as a policy and then give it to the city attorney and city administration, and it would be thoroughly vetted by them. And they would make any changes that they felt were necessary. We have a new city attorney and she's got a really a fresh eye on things. So we would go through those channels and then I would bring it back to you and let you see where it had ended up. If you felt that anything needed to be tweaked, I would bring that back then to the city attorney again. And we would see what she said, and then eventually it would go to the city council as, I don't know if it would be a discussion item or a consent item. They would either, if they felt like they need to have a discussion item about it before they approved it, they would. If they felt that the staff report and the policy looked tight and sufficient, then that it would just be a consent item and they would vote to approve, which is what they did with the internet safety policy that you helped me with.
So I am thinking about the flip side of this, which is why I can understand that there are people who are going around to be disruptive, but the other times people film and put it up on the internet is when the people in authority are harassing, racist, disrespectful. And so I think in partnership with a policy about filming, there needs to be some explicit communication about how you any patron would expect to be treated and what to do if that's not being met. If, you know, if a patron were experiencing micro or macro aggressions, they need to know that there's a place that they can go bring it and that it will actually be heard. So I'm thinking that that probably needs to happen in partnership, recognizing that there are sometimes reasons why people resort to filming in those situations. And I certainly hope none of our librarians or patrons would ever behave in an aggressive or racist or sexist or homophobic or transphobic or you name it way, but it could happen, and it's easy to not be aware of it as a leader. So we need to make sure there's ways to hear about that.
Yeah, I think that the times when these videos have gone viral are when the staff hasn't known what to do, and they've met the person with not hostility, but tremendous nervousness, and haven't known what to do, so they've called the police or they've called the security guard, because no one's known the proper way to react. And so that's why I want to have a policy so that everyone stays calm, because they know exactly what to do. That's 90% of the battle right there, I believe. It's just people having the comfort of knowing how they're supposed to react. And so I totally agree with you that there are times when people do need to film things, and probably that would be everyone in the library. Would we be whipping out their phones and filming it because they would be upset about watching it? We have had situations where we've had, you know, an unruly or you're even potentially violent patron, and we have had other patrons not only physically standing behind us to like give the message that they're protecting us, but they have also pulled out their phones to film, just, you know, while we're calling the sheriff's office. And so I do understand that concern.
I'll just take another variation of what Lori said, because the other thing is, again, if you have a policy that puts a blanket prohibition on filming unless you have 24 hours notice or whatever that is, then when it comes to implementation, let's say, I mean, I know I've done this. I've taken videos of my kids when they're playing with the toys in the video. And so if you have a policy like that, then how are the employees supposed to deal with something like that? That is clearly would be against policy, but probably isn't something necessarily that the library wants to prohibit. So what I'm just saying is that these are very, very complicated issues that I think really thinking through them before there's a policy. And then the other thing I just want to throw out is some of the things that you mentioned that you really don't want to happen. For example, you don't want patrons coming behind the desk. You don't want them to do that regardless of whether or not they have a camera. And so part of me wonders if some of these things can be taken into account with some of the other policies you probably either already have or want to have. I'm just slightly worried that you might be making a policy for some of the, for a very, very rare event. That would be awful if it happens, but we don't want that one rare event to kind of trigger these cascading events where, you know, a parent feels weird about videotaping their kids playing with the big Legos and the blocks and the whatever it is. So that's my concern.
I think there's a distinction between filming your own, the people you're with, you know, with express permission. Mommy's gonna, you know, can mommy take a video, or versus filming other people, which would require permission. And you're right that nailing that correctly. But I do think that there's some training that could happen even prior to a policy around what do you do if someone is just filming, you know, holding a camera in your face. What if that you can say, I don't prefer to be filmed, or, you know, it doesn't only have to be a policy or not a policy.
In this case, with the people that are doing these audits, it does have to be a policy. They always ask to see, where's the policy on this? Show me the proof. So that's my concern. Because that can deflate the situation right there.
Any other comments or questions on this?
Okay, well, I'll do some more research and I'll try to answer some of the questions that you've asked me today. And I think it will take, I don't think I'll be able to get to it for our next meeting. So I think what I will bring to the next meeting is the collection development policy and the request for reconsideration form that we have, and have you take a look at those, given the fact that Library Journal this month reported that there have already been more requests for banning books this year than there were in the previous 2 years combined. And they are, you know, not all conservatives that are asking for the titles to be repressed. So I think I will bring that to the next meeting while I am working on this and giving it to the city attorney, if that's all right with you. And then I will come back to you at the July or August meeting with answers about this and a possible policy that's been vetted by library, by city administration. We also have our city administrator, city manager leaving in at the end of June, I believe. So there might be a little bit of time before I can get it vetted at that level. So I will bring it sometime after June. Hopefully not too much beyond June, because I really do want to get this done and get the staff trained and prepared for the eventuality, which hopefully will never happen. So, okay.
Great.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to that, to the hearing about book banning and your policies. Request for consideration at our next meeting. Are there any other future agenda items that we want to see at this time? Okay. Well, we do meet in June. We do not meet in July.
Oh, that's right.
But we'll convene again in August after that. And if there's nothing further, we can adjourn the meeting. All right, the meeting is adjourned at 6:47.
Georgia, no peace, no peace.